Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. This is your trigger warning. This podcast is raw. It is real, and it doesn't sugarcoat what it means to survive trauma, abuse, mental health battles, or even the aftermath of living in survival mode for too damn long. What you hear on Survival Mode Disrupted includes unfiltered stories, graphic details, and a vulnerable truth that may trigger some of the audience. Please prioritize your emotional safety. If something feels too heavy, pause. Breathe. Come back when you're ready or not at all. Your healing is yours to honor. These episodes are based on lived experience, not therapy sessions or clinical advice. Listening does not replace mental health treatment or constitute a coach-client relationship. If you're in crisis, please seek immediate help from a licensed professional or contact your local emergency services. This space is built with care, but it's also built for truth and built for disruption. Take what you need, leave the rest, and most of all, trust yourself. If this podcast speaks to your soul, you don't have to do this work alone. Feel free to join our free Facebook community for high-achieving women ready to break cycles and heal out loud. Join us at Disrupting Survival Mode on Facebook. Or grab the book that started this movement, Exiting Survival Mode, a raw step-by-step guide to help you identify, release, and rebuild from the survival patterns that have been keeping you stuck. Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. This is your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and today we have Jada with us. So Jada, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hello, hello, and thank you for having me. So yeah, I'm Jada, and I'm a marketing message strategist and mentor for women entrepreneurs, and I specialize in making their messaging magnetic for their specific ideal clients and really helping them attract more of these perfect fit, high-level clients who already want to work with them and them only, while also helping them really own their brilliance unapologetically instead of like downplaying it as us women are often taught to do.
I love energetic posturing in any consideration, especially for women. And when I talk about what I do, I always say I facilitate disruptive, unapologetic transformations.
I love that word. So many of us need it, I think.
Yes, absolutely. So how would you describe survival mode?
So I think survival mode can really feel a bit personal to, you know, each of us and how we experience it and how maybe we experience it differently at different stages of our life. But for me, when I was really stuck in it, it was just kind of like making it to the next day. So the survival element was just surviving until the next day, as in just using your energy, your mental power, just to make it to the next day and pushing through rather than, you know, thriving, rather than feeling like free, like yourself. It was just about keeping on going, really, which is, you know, really sad when you think about it.
It is really sad. And that's one of the reasons why I'm having these podcasts, because so many of us relate to that, but don't know how to shift that narrative. So why don't you tell us your story to and through survival mode?
Yeah. So if there's one thing that people can learn from my story is that recovery isn't always linear. And, you know, if you ever feel like you're taking a bit of a step back or anything like that, it doesn't mean that there's something wrong with you. It doesn't mean you're broken. It just means that there are some ups and downs, and some things can show up at different times throughout your life. In my case, I've always had some struggles with mental health in general, and they manifested themselves in different ways. Like, I developed a very strong form of OCD when I was in my teens, and then I did CBT for that, and then after a bit I developed something else. It was always something, basically, and it ended up being also like a generalized anxiety disorder when I was in my late 20s. And again, I did CBT, and you know, it really helped. It really helped loads, and you know, the biggest symptoms did go away. But whenever I was doing that, there was still something kind of like lurking. You know, I was feeling better, and I've already overcome the main problem, but there was still something that didn't feel, you know, fully fine. And it ended up being two things. Like, one was that it turns out that I had been an undiagnosed autistic woman for my entire life, and I didn't know, and I only found that out earlier this year. So that obviously doesn't help when it comes to the nervous system regulation side of things, because you know, the autistic brain works very differently. So that's why I kept developing all these problems. But then on top of that, I was basically stuck in survival mode, and it took me some time to figure out that it was that, and I didn't know what was causing it. All I knew was, you know, my symptoms, which is kind of like what I described earlier. It was feeling like I was always pushing through. And for me personally, one of the main things was that I was overworking, and I was adding things to my to-do list when there was no real reason for that. And if I got to the end of my workday and I felt fine mentally, and I felt like refreshed, my body felt like that was wrong. No, I had to keep pushing. I had to get to the point where I was feeling not fine, because that was my normal in a way. And it was starting to manifest. It was starting to obviously impact my business as well. For example, like I realized that I was kind of hoping not to find any new applications, any new inquiries in my inbox when I was opening, which is literally the one thing that my business depends on, is new clients. And I love working with new clients. And yet I was in this weird pattern where, like, I didn't want any interruptions. And I later realized, after getting the help that I got, which I'll get to soon, I realized that that was simply due to the fact that I was so focused on those endless to-do lists that having a new inquiry would disrupt that. And I didn't want that. I wanted the to-do list. So obviously it was really unhealthy. And I invested in like external help, in someone who specialized in RTT, which is rapid transformation therapy, hypnosis, and nervous system regulation, because I really wanted to get to the root of the problem. Because, you know, CBT helped with, you know, when these problems were turning into some kind of disorder, but when it was just day to day, there was still like something that felt wrong, that felt more difficult, that didn't feel good. And so basically, I did this type of therapy, did this path, this nervous system regulation, and we finally got to the actual root of the problems. And the main limiting belief, the main thing that was holding me back, it was this belief that I wasn't really worth it on my own. My worth was attached to how much I was doing, how much I was working, how much I was producing, and how much I was achieving. So that was running the show, and I didn't know. It was like doing its own thing, and that's why I was like always working when there was no reason, and just keeping on going and all that. And in my case, we also managed to find out what caused that limiting belief, that wrong belief, to kind of like take root in my brain. And it's probably gonna get a bit dark, but I guess obviously your listeners are kind of used to it. And in my case, it was three main things. It was the fact that I grew up with a narcissistic parent. If anyone has got an experience with a narcissist in their lives, whether that's a parent, a relative, a friend, a partner, then they know that when you have them around, and they can be lovely sometimes, they can be nice people to you, and sometimes they're not. But in general, you are always, even though you don't realize, you are always walking on eggshells, because you have to keep the peace. You have to make sure that the narcissist is happy, because otherwise there's going to be consequences. You have to watch what you say. You have to be careful. You have to shrink. And that was, you know, you don't realize at the time, but that it generates, like, you know, it's kind of like ongoing survival mode in a way. And I didn't realize I had that, you know, in my body still. Then the other thing was that from my entire family, I was always pressured to be the best. I need to be the best at school. I need to be a high achiever. I couldn't do anything wrong. I still remember that, like, when I, so the system is a bit different at school in Italy, but we also get marked on our behavior on top of different subjects. And I once got 9 out of 10 instead of 10 out of 10. And I remember that for my mom, that was, oh my God, the end of the world. Oh my God, what happened to you? Oh, like, this is like the worst thing. I don't know what to do with you. And that was one of the moments that we focused on when I did that work. I was like, oh my God, like, me getting 9 out of 10 means that if I'm not perfect, I'm not worthy. I'm upsetting people. There is something wrong with me. I have to be the 10 out of 10 in everything, in my business, in relationships, and so on. So that was like another thing to unpack. And the other thing was that the kind of like played into that belief that I'm not really worthy was that I was like abused by a different family member when I was 12. And that really generated that sense of, you know, dirt and unworthiness about me being in my body. And I'd already like kind of like faced that a bit in therapy, but not to that extent. And I had never realized that it was attached to that belief, and it kind of like played into it. It was like fire. And so we had this cocktail of things of, you know, the narcissistic father, like the family pressuring me to always be perfect, that thing that was done to me, and it really like resulting in that belief getting stronger and stronger, manifesting itself in the way I was acting, in the way I was feeling in my body. And so yeah, like to get better, I first had to face that belief, which obviously wasn't pleasant, but it's by facing these things that we then can, you know, rewire our brain and replace that belief with a better belief, with something more empowering and something true, because now I know that it's not true that my worth is only attached to how much I produce. Now I know that I'm worthy regardless of that, and that I shouldn't push myself to that point, that it's not needed, and it's not nice towards myself. So those were the main things that, yeah, that I worked on to get out of survival mode and done a lot of nervous system regulation. And I think something that I need to be mindful of is that whilst I was doing that, I was also getting diagnosed and finding out that I was autistic. So that was a bit of a trauma in itself, not because I realized I was autistic, but I realized that for 30 years of my life, I grew up thinking there was something wrong with me, that I was the problem, that I was weird, that I was not like other people. And I was masking and I was doing all these things to try and fit in, and it was exhausting. So on top of everything else, I had that thing to come to terms with. And I think I still not fully gotten around to it. I'm still learning, I'm still trying to understand how my mind and my body work now that I know that there is the autism side of things as well. And that's why I keep going on over the fact that, you know, this is like a path, and it's normal sometimes to take some steps back and find these kind of challenges that, even though, you know, you've been doing better, then you realize actually there's this other thing that I need to work on. But it's so important to keep this going, you know, keep up with this even when you feel fine. And that's something that I've learned from this path with this person, that it's not just about extinguishing fires. You know, you kind of need to keep putting yourself first and being, you know, in tune with your body and listen to what it's trying to tell you before you get to that point. Because if you do it, you know, every day a little bit, then hopefully you're not gonna get to the point where it gets really, really bad. And so yeah, that's what I would say, that's the bulk of my story with survival mode and getting out of it. And it was, you know, it was hard, but it was so worth it to no longer be attached, no longer have that belief running the show. And I think the other thing that I would like to highlight here, that is on top of my own, you know, all my personal trauma, there was also the bigger trauma, the bigger conditioning that most women would be familiar with, which is the one that I was feeling a bit more because, you know, of growing up with a narcissistic father. But I think regardless of whether or not you had the similar experience, there is that bigger conditioning that as a woman, you do need to kind of like shrink and be humble and be everything for everyone and focus on being liked and put everyone else's needs before your own and try not to upset anyone. These kind of things that also were affecting the way I was showing up for my business in the past, and that I also had to work on, because, you know, without that, you know, first of all, it's not fair. And it makes it a lot harder to show up as the person that, you know, your clients can really notice and feel confident investing in and, you know, feel that kind of connection with. And so that was another thing that I kind of had to come to terms with and realize, actually, on top of that, I also need to acknowledge this thing that most women will be familiar with, and I didn't know what's inside me, but that was also kind of running the show a bit. So I would say survival mode is, in a way, is kind of like things running the show for you on top of what I said earlier. And getting out of it is realizing that you are the one running the show now, not all those other things. You're the one in charge.
Absolutely. And I can relate to so much. I grew up with a narcissistic father. I was, you said abused. I kind of read in between the lines based on what you said, which I won't elaborate on, but I will say to you that I was molested. I then had a lot of conditioning post that because of my school experience. And when I started my business, I burnt out in my first year simply because, on top of the conditioning that you mentioned about being a woman, being everything to everyone and very little to yourself, I am also a black woman. And my conditioning is I have to work twice as hard for half as much.
Yeah,
And
100%.
I showed up because I had huge aspirations for myself, but because my aspirations were so big, because my dreams were so big, it meant that I had to work not twice as hard, not three times as hard. I needed to work 10 times as hard to accomplish the things that I wanted to accomplish. And I was very passionate about being impactful in my business. I was very passionate about moving myself out of other environments like my corporate job that were traumatic for me. So I didn't give myself any grace, but I didn't know how to give myself grace because of the conditioning that I had experienced, because of the relationships that I had been in, because of the trauma that I experienced. So listening to you, and I love how you started because you didn't start at, wow, I grew up with, a narcissistic father. You started with the residual impact of all of that, right? Which a lot of people don't recognize. So, like for instance, we were both high achievers or slash overachievers. A lot of people don't recognize that overachieving is a trauma response.
100%.
I assumed it was,
Something you
part of my
do, huh?
personality. I could say that I could draw the parallels with the conditioning. I grew up in an environment, yes, my father was present, but the people who raised me were my mom, my granny, and my mom's five sisters, right? So I, sorry, four sisters, there's five of them. And they were all very strong, influential people. My mother was actually a Guinness Book World Record with two of her sisters. So growing up knowing that, growing up watching my aunties and my mom achieve like massive feats, it put a lot of pressure on me because of the
You are
conditioning that
not.
I, yeah, that I received. So you mentioned, part of your recovery was that like nervous system regulation. For those who are unaware, what did that actually look like?
So it really a lot. It first of all, like, I think that again is one of the things that can look different for different people because you have to really understand what works for you. And that was the difficult part. I was so disconnected from my body that I didn't know the signals that my body was giving me. But basically, nervous system regulation is about, again, like finding your figuring out like what your body's trying to tell you, what your nervous system is trying to tell you, reconnect with it, and try and make things like, you know, like soothe it a bit, and doing like exercises that help your nervous system calm down, and realize that, you know, there is no tiger chasing you, because there's still like those kinds of like instincts that we have from evolution in a way, that we are like, our brain thinks that we're in danger, our nervous system thinks we're in danger, when we're not really, because it's learned to recognize the wrong thing. So, for example, because I grew up with a narcissistic parent, I thought that certain things were dangerous when they weren't really. And even though logically, I can be like, no, actually, that's fine. My body, the nervous system doesn't work like that. The nervous system doesn't do logic. The nervous system just remembers something that associated as dangerous in the past. And whenever we feel like we experience something slightly similar, it's gonna start, you know, start with the programming of, okay, now we are in survival mode, now we are in fight or flight, and so on. And so nervous system regulation for me was kind of like taking the time to pause. So, for example, at the end of the workday, instead of continuing to push, it was about grounding myself, doing some breathing exercises, trying to reconnect with my body. For example, something that works really well for me is like to rub my temples. That's where it feels like the most sensitive. For some other people, it can be, I don't know, like doing some tapping. It can be a different part of their body. So sometimes I think you have to try different things to find what works for you, what type of breathing exercising work for you. But it's about things to help your body understand that, you know, we're safe and we're fine and we are good, we are worthy, and, you know, we are in charge and we can do this, whilst, you know, whilst also doing mindset work, while also working on, you know, doing therapy or whatever. Because I think without the nervous system regulation side of things, the logical part of our minds know something and learn something, but our body's still gonna try and kickstart these kind of mechanisms that are really counterproductive.
Absolutely. And a lot of people don't recognize that trauma lives very heavily in our body if it's unprocessed and unhealed. And, you know, one of the things that worked for me, you mentioned it was tapping, EFT is another way to categorize that. I really had to learn how to ground myself in situations that might have created anxiety for me, or I saw myself falling back into the normal patterns of doing what I knew to do based on what I've done in the past, which, and oftentimes that didn't lead me in the right direction. And, you know, grounding exercises do sometimes seem very simple, but they are very effective with getting us to a place of homeostasis. You know, when we're in survival mode, we're stuck in fight, flight, fawn, or freeze for an extended period of time. We don't know how to close that cycle to return to homeostasis. And oftentimes when, and you spoke about this, like, you know, getting to the end of a work day and feeling like, if I'm not like busted, exhausted, drained, like I haven't done enough. And that speaks to the almost chemical addiction to being in that state. It's almost like our body, you know, when you're in fight or flight, your heart rate is raised, you know, you probably breathe a lot more shallow, and it's almost like your body
Wants
needs
that.
to be there, even though it's not a great state. But because
It's
oftentimes people,
familiar.
yes, oftentimes people are in survival mode for years and years and years without the reconciliation of that. So their body thinks that's normal. And oftentimes when they get to a place of calm, it's so uncomfortable, right? Like, I silence and sitting and just doing nothing, I didn't know how to do that. Like,
Oh my
I,
God,
you know,
same.
when I started my business with an 18-month-old and a 6-week-old. And in that moment, I should have been resting. I should have been chilling. I was doing everything that I needed with one on a hip and the other one on a breast
My
and trying
goodness.
to do all that I could. I was doing something on the computer, listening to something on my phone. Like, I didn't know how not to multitask. I didn't know how to time block and prioritize one, you know, one task at a time. Like, I Why do I have two arms, so I should at least be doing two things at a time, right? And that was huge for me to be able to peel back the amount of things that I was doing without feeling guilty, without feeling shameful of what I couldn't or didn't accomplish in a day. I, like you, was addicted to to-do lists, especially when I was working. And my to-do lists were the very tiny post-its, which were everywhere. Like everywhere. Like my room was littered with post-it notes, but it felt good to be then able to rip it
To tick
off,
something off the
tear it up and throw it away. I did it, right? And what I really had to do in my business, in my life, is learn how to time block. Like now, it may seem silly to some, but I am tied to my calendar because I spend so much time blocking. And if it's not in my calendar, I really don't have time for it, which to some may seem a bit ridiculous, but like I time block lunch, I time block time with my children, I time block this and that. And while, I do have my children with me 24 hours a day because I homeschool and I have to move away from it often, I had to do it to help me rewrite the conditioning that I had for many, many years.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. I function with time blocks as well, like personally. And I think for me, it's also to do with now that I understand a bit more about how the autism side of things works. For me, it's really good to have structure. So, it's something that I've started to be a bit more, having a bit more boundaries around it. And again, that comes with some feelings of guilt because it maybe you think, oh, but I'm going to upset people who kind of want to be a lot more spontaneous around me. But, at the end of the day, you got to do what's best for you. Yourself, you can't make yourself miserable or do something that really doesn't work for your nervous system, for your brain, just to please other people. Again, going back to that conditioning that you got to be everything for everyone. You can't, as cliche as it sounds, you can't, what's the saying, the one, you got to have your cup full because before you can fill someone else's. And if time blocking is what works for you, like, I think that's the best thing. It's great that you know what works for you and that you're doing it and it's making things more, it's helped you get out of that previous kind of pattern of just continuing to work and work.
Whenever I talk about accident survival mode, I always talk about it in three phases. The first is self-awareness, right? Like, and we both are aware that our need for that to-do list, our need to be working all the time is what helped keep us in survival mode, right? That you can change what you can see. The second phase is the reprogramming. So challenging the conditioning, challenging the narratives, challenging the behaviors that come as a result of those things is also important. And then the third is reinvention. We get to reinvent ourselves every single second of the day. Like I used to say, every day of the year. No, we can decide this second that today or right now I am this. We have more power than we are ever given, do we ever give credit for, right? I think a lot of people don't recognize how much control they have over their lives, often because of the conditioning. Or maybe their culture, or maybe, the trauma they have experienced. And I think once you are able to step into your power and be able to say, okay, a second ago I was this, but this second I'm this, and next second I could be this, and own it and believe it and know that you deserve that, it changes everything. It allows you to build boundaries that you weren't previously able to do. It allows you to really take center stage in the story that is you moving forward.
100%. And I think it's important to be aware that, like, whenever we do that, there's gonna be a bit of resistance from our nervous system, our brain, because it feels new and our brain likes what's familiar, even no matter how bad it is for us. So it's normal to feel a bit of resistance. But it's if we're aware of it, that's already like, we're halfway there because we know we can expect it and we can choose whether to just let that win or to be the ones, embrace that new identity, the one that actually serves us. And ignore the fact that, our brain is going to be a bit not on board at first, but the more we do it, the more we have behaviors that go with it, the more we reinforce those beliefs, the better it's going to feel. And then we're really going to feel like that new identity, like the one that is actually, who we were probably meant to be from the start if we didn't have all these things kind of getting in the way.
I mean, you bring up another interesting point, right? Our brain hates change.
Yep.
Like I say all the time, our brain is our biggest op. It hates change. It
Yeah.
keeps us in a state, our comfort zone, our subconscious mind. I say our subconscious minds acts as an invisible fence. And I don't know if you know what an invisible fence is for like dogs in a yard where they put like this collar on the
All
dog,
right,
but
yeah.
it's no fencing and the
Okay,
dog
yeah.
like goes beyond the boundary and it kind of gets zapped and it will go back. Our brains operate like that. So we get used to the fight, flight, fawn, and freeze state. We get used to the conditioning. We get used to our trauma responses. And the minute we start trying to change, our brain is like,
For the
whoa, whoa,
better.
whoa.
Yeah.
What
Yeah, and
the
that's
hell
the
are you
ironic
doing?
thing, right? It's the ironic thing because it's like we a part of us is like, oh, but surely we're trying to change for the better. It should feel good. But it's so important to be aware that even though it's changing for the better, it won't feel good at first because it's different, it's change, and our brain is gonna try and do everything it can to keep us where we are. But if where we are doesn't work for us, if it's making us miserable, if it's keeping us exhausted in survival mode, then it's totally worth it to go through that initial discomfort to then embrace this new way of living in a way.
Absolutely. And it really takes a commitment to the change, right? And that's why I think change is so difficult for so many people. You know, there's this saying that change only occurs when your willingness to change supersedes your willingness to stay the same. And that means that if you are really anchored into healing beyond survival mode, even when it's uncomfortable, even when you feel like stopping, you have to be consistent. Like one of the things, and I've talked about this quite a bit on this show, one of the things that was like instrumental to me as I started really acting in survival mode and really committing to my healing journey was actually my coaching training and understanding the connection between my emotion, my feelings, emotions, and thoughts and actions. And when I recognize that, wait a minute, I actually can change my thoughts. I actually can challenge my thoughts. I would literally challenge them out loud, and people would think I'm like crazy, but I couldn't think it. I had to say it out loud. I had to like bring it to realness. Like I had to hear it instead of just think it. And there would be times where I'd be sat there washing dishes and I'll be like, no, girl, we're not going there today. Like, we're not going on that road. Like, you know, because I had to learn how to change my thoughts. I had to learn how to challenge them. And while it was so uncomfortable and my conscious mind was telling me, like, no, you're fine, I had to do something that would be impactful enough so that I would keep doing it and keep doing it. And now I don't have to talk to myself like I am full crazy out loud. I can catch my thoughts when they come and just change them. Like, I choose not to think like that right now. I choose not to take up that narrative. I choose not to give up my control. And it's changed my life, you know? So, listeners, you know, if you are early in your healing journey, and it doesn't necessarily be have to be early, but if you've been introduced to a new way of maybe regulating your nervous system or a new way of challenging your narratives, like don't think it's just going to change overnight because it absolutely does not. And you have to commit to staying in alignment with that change.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, so Jada, I have enjoyed this
Same here.
conversation. How can we find you online?
So my website is craftycopy.co.uk, and I'm mostly active on LinkedIn. And I also send like emails, especially to like my audience are business women who want to like you're ready to stand out as the one for their real clients and to finally own their brilliance, going back to the word unapologetically. So yeah, like those are the two first places to find me.
I love that, and I'll make sure that information is in your show notes. So
Thank
before
you.
we wrap it all up, what is one key takeaway that you want to leave with the audience?
I would say that, like, if you are feeling that kind of conditioning that we're talking about, you know, that maybe like you've always felt in some way, shape, or form, but you didn't know how to name it, you didn't know what it was, but you know, that conditioning of, you know, as a woman, you gotta stay small, you gotta shrink, you're gonna be humble, you're gonna put everyone else's needs before your own, and all of that. If you're recognizing it, make the choice to, you know, I say like flip the finger at that conditioning because, you know, we are worth much more than that. We deserve to own our brilliance. And I say this especially to business women, but any kind of woman, any person listening, you know, like if you have something that you're brilliant at that can impact people, share it with them instead of feeling like you have to shrink just because, you know, maybe someone out there is not gonna like you, or maybe like, you know, that someone might not be a fan or whatever, but you know, like show up for the kind of people who would benefit from it, even if your nervous system is not gonna like that at first. But I promise that you're gonna get used to it the more you do it.
Yes, you will get used to it as long as you can commit to it. Thank you.
That, yes.
Thank you so much for your time on Survival
Thank
Mode
you for having
Disrupted.
me.
You're welcome, and audience, thank you for catching another episode. And I just want to remind you, you were not built to break, but you damn sure were not built to just survive. Disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I will see you next week. Once again, thank you for joining another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted, hosted by the Survival Mode Disruptor, Letitia. You didn't land here by accident. This conversation, it probably cracked something open on purpose. Because survival mode isn't just a phase, it's a pattern, an identity, a prison masked as strength. But here's the truth: you're not broken. You're just unfinished. So if something stirred in you today, don't ignore it. Don't numb it. Move with it. And I want to once again invite you to join Disrupting Survival Mode, the Facebook community where healing is loud and messy and real. I also want to invite you to buy my book, The Survival Mode Exit Plan, because your breakthrough deserves a blueprint. And if you felt seen today, be sure to share this episode with someone who needs to hear it. Like, subscribe, and drop a review. That's how we amplify the voices that need to be heard. And remember, this isn't about fixing yourself. This is about finding yourself again beneath the rubble. Until next time, choose ease, choose power, choose you. This is Survival Mode Disrupted. Let's keep shaking shit up.